All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Sports Physio Podcast. I'm here with, I wouldn't call him my good friend, but I guess he's a guy I know.
Hey, I'm here. I'm Liam.
So Liam's here, so that sucks, but we're going to roll with it. Guys, today we're gonna tackle a massive topic. We're going to go kind of heavy towards the side of athletic development, maybe some more like sports performance, strength and conditioning, but we're just going to dive in on speed.
Speed, baby. Speed kills.
Speed kills. I love it, right? Like, I mean, this is really, when you think about it, like 100 meter dash, like that's a key. That's the biggest event, like in the Olympics, like at the NFL Combine, everybody wants to know who ran the best 40. Like, speed is the one, to me, like it's the pinnacle of all athletic traits. And for, you know, most of the sports that we like really play or focus on in this country, speed is ultimately like, that's what everybody's chasing, right? So I think our goal for today is to kind of define maybe some of the positions, parameters, forces, like just kind of quantify and really dig into. We did a lot of prep with the research for this show to see kind of what the literature actually shows us. What do we know about sprinting specifically? And what are maybe some of the components that could make you a good sprinter?
Yeah, we're going to provide something that I think a lot of people aren't very familiar with, and it's totally applicable to any strength trainer, any physical therapist, in my opinion. I'm excited about this, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get right into it. I think so our goal for this, and we'll kind of see where we've got an outline, but we'll see where this takes us. But we want to start, this really started, Liam and I have been having some really good discussions in the clinic. Like, just there's so much, I think, like anecdotal evidence out there, or like sayings, or just like random coaching cues behind like acceleration or top speed, right? And we want to really see like, what are the actual positions? Like, what is actually happening? Not just like what I'm telling you and I'm using these like this parlance or these terms, which they might be valuable, but it gets hard when everybody has their specific definitions to have, like to have a conversation, everybody be on the same page, right? So we wanted to really like define that within the research, and then maybe get into how our understanding of what is actually occurring could potentially influence some of those coaching cues, training methods, things like that. So maybe the first thing, Liam, do you want to read off maybe some of the factors that we put down for what makes up speed? What are some of the factors in speed?
Yeah. So there's a few components we're thinking about. We're thinking about, how strong somebody is, how much force they can produce. So we're talking about things like power, you know, force times velocity. How much force can someone put into the ground? How fast can they deliver that force as well? There's also some technique related things, like, you know, how are their mechanics? Are they like rotating their trunk? What are their arms doing? So there's very specific cues that someone can be doing too to improve their speed. We have a central nervous system components as well, adaptations that people can have to improve this ability. We're thinking about things like body mass. Obviously, if you're 400 pounds versus, you know, 150 pounds, things are going to change in that aspect. Anthropometrics, you know, how long are these people's legs? How long are their arms? Are they tall? Different things like that. And then elasticity. So just there's a lot of different things that contribute to what makes a person move from A to B at a fast speed.
And I think that's part of what makes this an interesting topic, right? Because based on your background, your experience, or who you're working with, you hear a lot of coaches talking about, like, for in the U.S. for sure, like strength and conditioning is dominated by like powerlifting and Olympic lifting. So you're gonna hear a lot of those coaches talk about like force is king, right? Like strength output, like get them strong. Like that's a common thing we've heard. So like we really want to validate, like, is that true? Like, is that how you get people fast? Is you just make them really strong? Is that actually what the research shows? And I think like one thing for sure, and I mean this is the truth with anything, but like, Liam just ripped off a bunch of factors there that I really don't think anyone would dispute play at least some impact in speed. So just hearing how many factors go into this tells me, like, as a coach and clinician, like there's a ton of different things going on. And this is where it gets really important to assess all those different components. And what we're trying to do is pick the component that's going to have the biggest influence, kind of sniper in on the attribute or the component or the factor that our athlete or client or patient or whatever struggles with the most, and apply that intervention to impact it.
Yeah, and that was like, and we just listed a bunch of things too, and like, they're really not overwhelming things. Like, oh man, I gotta know someone's mechanics as a physical therapist, and like, you'd be surprised. It's not, you know, it could be one cue you give an athlete that changes these mechanics. So these things we're talking about aren't like these, like, man, I'll never be able to achieve all these different attributes or help a athlete obtain these. So it's totally realistic.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. So I think when we talk about speed from an overview, there's really two components to speed that we want to talk about. And it's important to separate these because the joint angles, positions, basically the kinematics, and then the kinetics, so the forces that are going through the ground, through the joints, are very different at these two. But we're talking about acceleration, okay? And then we're talking about top speed, max velocity, upright running, where you're running as fast as you can. So we're going to kind of break it down based on those two components. And what you'll see kind of in the research too is like we said, they're very different in terms of the kinetics and kinematics. And also, I think there's a lot of break... it's important to differentiate them in terms of your training methods too, depending on what your goal is. So, let's start with acceleration. So, brief overview, when we talk about acceleration, okay, so we're talking for 0 to 20 meters, let's say, you're going to see world-class sprinters, okay, so like Usain Bolt's known for his ability to accelerate up to like 60 meters. You're not going to see that in most team sport athletes, and I think kind of a theme for me and Liam is, and I think a lot of people here, most of the athletes that we work with are team sport athletes. So we're talking football, basketball, soccer, volleyball. We don't have a lot of like Olympic level track and field sprinters or things like that. So I think it's important when you talk about speed as well to differentiate in the context of someone who is a sprinter and that's all they do versus a team sport athlete. And for a team sport athlete, the reason why I'm making this distinction, in my opinion, acceleration is going to be far and away the most important thing for them, just because they're not, most of these guys are going to reach top speed really quickly, and they're not going to be in a position where they sustain top speed for a long period. Even at positions like an outside wide receiver, it's very rare that they're going to run 40, 50 yards in a straight line. Their ability to rapidly cover those first 10 to 20 yards generally is a better predictor of their team sport success, in my opinion.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I think there's... Yeah, even when I think of a really, we were talking about this earlier too, but if you think about like a, you know, this wide receiver who's got this incredible top speed, he's only going to be going his top speed maybe, I don't know, just totally making this up, like 10% of the time if he catches deep ball, run it, not even 10%.
It's a low percentage for sure.
So I'd much rather take someone who can accelerate, you know, very quickly, because he's going to be doing that after every single play, running these quick little routes, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So in acceleration, we've got our two factors, kinetics and kinematics. So kinetics is basically the forces, okay? So how much force is going through the ground, direction of the force, all that stuff. General overview, when it comes to acceleration, we're talking about horizontal ground reaction force impulse. All that means is how much force and how quickly you're putting that force into the ground, primarily down and back. Because in acceleration, we're starting at zero, okay? And we're trying to increase our speed. We're trying to move forward, which is defined as the horizontal, or kind of that, think of your x-axis on your graph. So one of the defining characteristics, and you guys will see later why I think this is so important, but people that are good at accelerating, people that are really fast, are going to have much higher horizontal ground reaction force and impulse. So basically they're putting more force in the ground down and back than people that aren't. You're also going to see high levels of vertical ground reaction force. But that's not so much what the research shows, is it doesn't vary that much between fast and slow runners. Okay, so it's present, but the horizontal force is much more of kind of the defining factor impact. In terms of the kinematics, so kind of joint angles, positions, maybe biomechanics would be a better word, you're going to see a much more forward inclined trunk angle. Okay, so they're leaning, which I think most people are familiar with, understand. You're going to see a lot lower heel recovery. So their heels are staying closer to the ground. It's more of that pistoning type action. Ground contact time, so how long your foot is on the ground, is going to be much longer. And you're going to see larger amplitude, or basically they're going to cover more distance with their arms. So that's kind of the overview for acceleration. On the other side, with top speed, the kinetics, so joint forces with that, you're going to see really low levels of horizontal ground reaction force. Okay, so the primary kinetic difference between acceleration and top speed is at top speed, really, really low horizontal ground reaction forces, and you're going to have really high vertical ground reaction forces. So to give you guys some kind of perspective on that, there's been some good studies, like Usain Bolt. He's listed at 190 pounds. He's producing up to 1,000 newtons of force, vertical ground reaction forces when he's running at top speed. So obviously that's a really high number. You're looking at 3 to 5 times body weight, and in elite sprinters, 4 to 5 times is kind of where those guys are living. So I think that's really important to understand. Another thing too, like, and we've harped about this before, but don't separate knowing that, it just makes me think even more how we talked about in previous podcasts. If you guys are not clearing athletes in the weight room to squat or do jumping or do things like that, but they're getting cleared to go back on the field and sprint and run, understand the ground reaction forces, guys. We just said, sure, your high school female soccer player is probably not 5 times body weight, mm-hmm. but it's probably 3 times body weight or even 2 times body weight. So just realize, like, again, and I'm beating a dead horse here, but like, if you're not comfortable with them squatting slow, controlled in a weight room setting, I really have to question why you're comfortable with them sprinting mm-hmm. on a field, because the ground reaction forces are going to be pretty significant.
And so you said it was around
1,000 newtons.
Have you, just for more perspective too, I think I've seen some, I think it was a pretty high level woman, a female soccer player. She was in the 700s. Okay. What other, have you seen any other, just for more perspective on how high that is?
So most of the research that we looked at detailed 3 to 5 times body weight. So depending on, you know, if you've got a 200-pound athlete, you're looking at between 600 to 1,000 newtons of yes. force there. I mean, whether you're on the low end of that at three, let's say you're a 100-pound female athlete and you're on the lower end, so it's 3 times body weight. That's still 300 newtons of force going to the ground. So the point I'm making with this is I think people need to really understand sprinting, specifically high velocity sprinting, is probably the most stressful thing that you can do to the body in terms of certainly central nervous system, but also the force that's going through those connective tissues and things like that. So you need to, I guess the point I'm just trying to hammer here is like, you need to establish all the requisite stuff in the weight room, strength, plyometrics, all those things before you're really like introducing this high velocity sprinting. And I think that's why you see such high like incidence of injury with that high velocity sprinting, because we maybe don't have all the prerequisites to handle that amount of force. So that's kind of the kinetic overview with that. And then in terms of kinematics, with top speed, you're going to see a more vertical torso, so they're more upright, higher heel recovery. It's more of a cyclical action versus the pistoning action that you're going to see in acceleration. You're going to see significantly shorter ground contact times, and then you're going to see shorter amplitude with the arms. So that's kind of, that gives you a base overview of some of the difference between acceleration and top speed. So I don't know, what do you think? Do we want to jump to some of the force velocity profiling stuff, or is there more you want to hit on with acceleration and top speed?
I'll just add in, I was kind of confused about the low heel recovery. I've honestly haven't heard about this stuff before diving into it. Just to be really clear, low heel recovery is when your back leg is coming forward, that's what low heel recovery is. And when you're accelerating, that foot is staying pretty low to the ground. And it's not something you necessarily have to think about all the time. Some people just naturally do this, but some people do sometimes bring their heel too high up to their butt. So low heel recovery would be low to the ground. High heel recovery, you would see that foot driving pretty high up to their butt. And if you just YouTube, you know, people sprinting, you'll see in the first few steps, maybe 3 steps, there'll be low heel recovery. And then after those 3 steps, something like that, their foot will drive higher up to their butt. That's pretty much all I'm thinking about for that stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, those are good points. So we'll circle back to this, but I think one of the things we wanted to get into next, and there's been a lot of cool research on this, is so we know that I wanted to define some of these terms. So I think like it's real easy. A big thing for me, Liam and I have talked about this, is like, I think it's really important that everyone's speaking the same language. So you need to have a common set of definitions that you agree on and understand, because that's what's going to really allow you to understand the really understand this from a physics kind of biomechanics perspective. And then that can allow you to maybe think more logically about different drills or cues or things like that. So you're going to hear us reference a lot of different like physics formulas. So I just wanted to kind of give an overview of that. So when we talk about force, right? So what is force? If we define force, it's mass times acceleration, right? So to get a high force output, you can manipulate one of two things. You could have higher mass or you could have higher acceleration. And this makes sense. Like think of it when you're doing a back squat, right? If I have 100 pounds on the bar and I'm moving at 1 meter per second, that's going to give me 100 watts, okay, for my power output. If I put more weight on the bar and I move at the same, I accelerate at the same rate, the power is going to be higher. Vice versa, I could also put less weight on the bar and accelerate faster, and I might still get that same power or that same force output, excuse me. Power is going to be force times velocity, right? So if we isolate that force component, what we can get is our power formula is basically power is equal to mass times acceleration, which is force, right? So I'm substituting in for my F variable, times velocity. So I think the point I'm trying to make here is you need to understand there's a bunch of different variables that you can influence here, and they're going to change force or power or velocity for that matter. And what we're going to talk about next is basically how you're able to manipulate or understand if there is one or more of these variables that maybe you want to target a little bit more than the other, right? And again, here, like just looking through some of my notes, so one of the things I talked about is like if we want to put power into the equation with force, then we could say force is equal to power over velocity, right? And you guys have all done basic algebra, right? So you can go back and forth between this, but I like to look at it from those equations first, just because I think it makes it a little bit more clear in terms of these terms and where we're getting them. So force velocity profiling. Basically what this is we are taking a look at how athletes are producing power, right? We're looking at the two components, force and velocity. And we're seeing if athletes have a tendency or a preference or using one of those variables more so than the other one to influence their power, right? So are they using force more or are they using velocity more? If I was going to put this in like layman's terms or simple terms, like is this athlete maybe really strong, so they're more reliant on force, or are they maybe like real like explosive or bouncy or elastic, like maybe they're a little bit more reliant on the velocity side of this spectrum. So this is something like I think we've all seen it, right? An athlete that's maybe like really strong versus an athlete who we wouldn't consider to be like traditionally weight room strong, but they can jump really high, they can run really fast. The force velocity profiling in my mind is just a way to look a little bit more objectively about why that is or how that occurs, and then take that objective data and does that help us with understanding this athlete and how we might be able to make them better or prevent injury or whatever we want to do. So basically, how is an athlete producing power? That's what the force velocity profile looks like. How do we test it? Well, if we want to look at their vertical force velocity profile, we're just going to do a series of vertical jumps with different weights, okay? So body weight plus 20%, body weight plus 40%, so on and so forth. How high are they jumping with various loads? And that's going to give us that force velocity profile. You can do the same thing with sprinting. So we're going to get more of that horizontal force velocity profile. So I'm just going to sprint body weight and then body weight plus at varying increments of additional load. You also can build force velocity profile, and we didn't look at this too much, but you can build it in the weight room, right? So you could do the same thing with a back squat. So I'm going to back squat with just the bar, then I'm going to add 20 kilos to the bar each time, and I can take a look at the force and velocity relationship as I go through there. I think with the field sport athletes, there's been a lot of work, and I think like there's so many companies in the past 5-10 years that have made force velocity profiling in the weight room more accessible. And I know like I work a lot in the baseball community. There's been this big explosion of velocity-based training in the weight room, and that's cool. But I think one of the things you'll see after we kind of really dive into the research, but this is very specific to the actions that are occurring. So jumping, sprinting, So I think it's important to not just rely on maybe a force velocity profile that you build squatting, because that might be very different based on someone sprinting. Again, why would we want to do this? Basically, we want to see if an athlete needs to be more force, to if we need to train more force or more velocity. I also think that there's some compelling evidence in the literature that you could use this to maybe measure readiness for athletes. And also there seems to be at least some evidence that you can have some injury risk or maybe some predictions specifically for hamstring issues based on what their specific force velocity profile looks like. Okay. Practically, what does this mean? If we do the force velocity profile and we find that an athlete is force deficient, we're probably going to want to focus their training a little bit more on heavy, slow strength training. Maybe we want to use some resisted or like heavy sled sprinting. Probably going to be an emphasis on plyometrics that have longer ground contact times and deeper joint angles. So maybe like a seated box jump. And then you might want to get more of their power work in the weight room with loaded variations. So Olympic lifts, loaded jumps, things of that nature. For an athlete who might be more velocity deficient, in the weight room, you're probably going to really want to focus on speed strength or speed. So we're talking less than 50% of their one rep max for short duration sets, 1 to 5 reps and multiple sets where the emphasis is on moving that bar really fast. Plyometrics, you're probably going to want to use lower amplitude, short ground contact time plyometrics. So versus that seated box jump, it might be like repeat hurdle jumps where you're cueing the athlete not so much on maximal vertical displacement, but on limiting that ground contact time and applying a high vertical force in a short period of time. Could potentially benefit from some overspeed training. And then one note too for these guys, I think something that's going to guide kind of our overarching theme here and why it's so important to establish what the athlete needs. If you have a velocity deficient athlete, what that's telling you too is like, you probably need to really look at how you're allocating your training resources. And I would say a simple takeaway from that is less time in the weight room, maybe more time out on the field, working on jumping, sprinting, things that are a little bit faster in nature. So that's kind of a basic overview of the force velocity profiling. Anything you want to touch on or add with that, Liam?
Yeah, I think this is super interesting. I can see this being used in by a lot of different just categories of people, whether it be, I see it being super helpful for like a high school coach trying to improve his overall performance of his players. If I don't know how realistic it'd be, you know, as we get more efficient with testing these guys, you can really take each player through one of these tests, organize them. Okay, are they force deficient? Are they velocity deficient? And then you can tailor their program. You know, maybe they do some of the similar workouts, still improve their force, because obviously when you're in high school, you're going to be, most of the guys are going to be force deficient. So they're still going to be doing a lot of similar things, but then maybe, I don't know, like last 20 minutes of an exercise session, create a more specific routine for these guys so you can get them closer to performing optimally.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this has so many applications. Like, I think of if I'm a high school program or college program, even if you don't change your training systems, I would argue do these profiling, and it can just be a trend of your program, right? So if you do this over a couple of years, you start to see, wow, everyone's force deficient, then maybe you shift some of your focus to allocate more of your training time and resources towards developing force. If you start to see a trend that, hey, 80% of our athletes are velocity deficient, maybe you just place a greater emphasis on this. So I think today's going to be a little bit more, a lot of this is like kind of more theoretical in nature. And I know sometimes people are like, well, what's the practical applications of this? There's so many practical applications of this, and it really depends on your setting, the athletes you're working with, and the resources that you have at your disposal. But regardless of that, like, I feel really confident. Like, even if you're just you're just working in like a regular like outpatient setting, and you have like a high school athlete that you're rehabbing, there's some simple, the jump profiling specifically is really pretty simple to do. And I think you can gain some valuable insights from getting that information. So
yeah, and there's different protocols out there that can tell you specifically how to do this, and then they provide you with different I don't know if the right term is algorithm, but you just type in these numbers, they provide you with, okay, this is where they're at, this is where they could be at, if they're more efficient. So it's very, like, for the vertical, if you take an athlete, how long do you think it would take to take them through this? Just the vertical component.
I mean, you could get it done in 5 minutes. Yeah. I mean, maybe 10 minutes. Like, it's like anything else. The more you do it and the more frequently you do it, the faster you're going to get it done. But I think, like, the information you get from this, in my mind, justifies the time for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done pretty quickly and pretty practically. What do you think, Liam? Did you want to go more in the...
Yeah, let's explain some definitions here, and then that will allow us to go a little deeper into this stuff too.
Perfect. Do you want me to take those definitions, or how do you want to split this up?
Let's see. I don't have the definitions right in front of me. Let's see. They should be right around here somewhere.
I definitely think it's time for the seltzer water, unfortunately. Oh. Yep. Thought that was going to be an IPA.
Thought that was IPA.
You know, 7:02 a.m. might be a good time for an IPA, but I guess I'll just stick with my little Safeway brand seltzer water here.
Hey, man, when you're quarantining, it's 5 o'clock all the time.
For the record, Liam and I are 6 feet apart. We are respecting proper social distancing right now.
Well, the first definition right here. So we're talking about, let's start from the top here. So these definitions we're going to talk about, they're all relevant terms in regards to this force velocity profiling. So if you look up any of this research, they're going to be using these terms very consistently. So it's good to understand what they're talking about with these. So when we're talking about the first one, it's SFV. Is that how you would say it? Or is this SF sub V? How would you, is there a certain way that you've seen people say these things?
I think S sub FV.
Okay. So this one is talking about when you take someone through the force velocity profiling and you input this information, it's going to give you a slope of their force velocity relationship. And the angle of this slope on an XY axis tells you information. If it's more steep, I want to make sure I'm saying this right. Yeah. If it's more steep, it means this athlete is more force dependent.
Correct.
If it's more flat, it means your athlete is more velocity dependent.
Correct.
So with that information, the next term is SFV optimal. What this term is it's another slope, but it's basically the slope of what this athlete's optimal force velocity performance should be. Kaimi, can you explain that one a little more eloquently for our people?
Yeah, so basically the terms Liam's talking about, so SFV, it's the slope of the relationship between force and velocity. Okay, so we've got force on our y-axis and we've got velocity on our x-axis. So when I'm at zero velocity, force is maximized. Okay, so zero, this is my y-intercept. Zero velocity, really high force. As I move to the right of that graph, so let's say I'm at 1.0 meters per second now. My velocity is coming up, the force is coming down with it. As you continue to move to the right, it slopes down and to the right. So that's what Liam's talking about with the more negative inclination there. The steeper that slope is going down and to the right, the more reliant or the more like force oriented that athlete is, and vice versa. Okay. If someone's line isn't as steep, their slope isn't as steep, that means that they're not dropping off as much when they increase velocity in terms of how much force they can produce. Dropping off is maybe not the right term, but there's not as big a discrepancy. The slope isn't as steep. Okay. So that's S sub FV. Simply put, it's just the athlete's relationship between force and velocity in terms of their power production. SFV optimal is the ideal slope. So this is the ideal ratio between the two to produce the highest power output, right? So we talked about earlier, power is equal to force times velocity. So for each athlete, there is an optimal slope or an optimal ratio, an optimal balance between force and velocity. That's all that value is. Okay, so the first number tells us where the athlete's at, what their ratio is between force and velocity. The second number tells us what the best value, what the best ratio would be for those athletes to produce the highest Pmax or power. And then the next thing we have on here is FV imbalance percentage. that tells us how far off they are from optimal. So we've got ratio that the athletes have currently between force and velocity, what their optimal ratio should be, and then how far away they are from optimal. So SFV is their current ratio. SFV optimal is what they should be or what the ratio is that we want them to have. And then force velocity imbalance percentage is how far away from optimal they are. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
So those variables are kind of specific to the vertical profiling, which, and when we say vertical profiling, all that is it's the jump testing. So you're doing a series of vertical jumps with varying loads. You're jumping with just a body weight, you're jumping with 20 kilos, you're jumping with 40 kilos, you're jumping with 60 kilos, and you're looking at how fast they're moving and how high they're going. And that's how you're building these profiles.
Yeah, just to be clear, the force velocity profiling, there's two different tests right now. You can test it in the vertical plane and the horizontal plane. Both are valuable, but they tell you different information.
Yep, exactly. And then, so just real quickly too, with that, so the other three like variables you're gonna see here, it's just that P is equal to FV, right? So in here they're talking about P max. So this is maximal power output. So this is what we're trying to optimize this, right? Higher power is gonna be better. You've got V zero. So this is just maximal extension velocity. So this is your X intercept on the graph here. When force is zero, what's the maximal theoretical velocity that this athlete could achieve? And specifically in this, we're talking extension velocity of the athlete's lower limbs during ballistic push off. So how rapidly can they triple extend or plantar flex their ankles, extend their knees, extend their hips? And then F sub zero, right? So maximal concentric force. This is your Y intercept. So I think it's important, like, and I think most intuitively we get this, right? If I'm squatting with just the bar, I can probably move really quickly. If I'm squatting with 500 pounds on my back, in my case, I can't move at all. Well, I can move down to the ground as I get stapled to the ground. But if I were able to do that, I'd be moving very slowly. And that's all this relationship is describing. When velocity is very slow, force is typically very high. When force is really low, velocity is typically really high. And the force velocity profile allows you to see where on that continuum the athlete is falling. That all relates to kind of the vertical force velocity profiling. One thing that's really, really cool, and I think like I learned a lot about researching for this, and I've done some of the vertical force velocity profiling in the past, but not enough, haven't done it on a big enough scale to really draw too many inferences. But I think both Liam and I are pretty excited by just the concept behind this for sure. The horizontal force velocity profiling is something I've read about but haven't done in the past. But I think this is really cool because this is looking at that same relationship between force and velocity, but you're looking at it in the context of sprinting. So in that vertical jump, the goal is vertical displacement. Obviously in sprinting, the goal is to go forward, horizontal displacement. So it changes some of the things a little bit. So we have, you have those same things in terms of force velocity and Pmax, right? So we've still got F zero. So again, this is maximal force output. You've got V zero, which is gonna be
Siri.
There we go, Siri.
You're not invited to this party right now.
You've got V sub zero. So this is gonna be basically a maximal running velocity. Okay. And then you've got your P max. And we're talking about these specifically in the horizontal plane. Again, because that's gonna, and you guys will see as we talk more about this why that's so important specifically for sprinting and running. So do you want me to keep running with this?
I just want to take a break. I think we need to add Siri as a first guest as well because of that.
Welcome to the pod.
That was Siri. That was Jaime's watch just interrupting this podcast, by the way. Sorry, my ADD just totally kicked in right there. Go ahead.
I love it. So when it comes to the horizontal force velocity profiling, there's three other kind of additional variables here that we want to take a look at. So the first one is going to be RF percentage. So this is basically the equivalent of SFV for the horizontal force profiling. So RF percentage is, I'll read you straight from the some good research here from JB Marin and Pierre Samazzino, which we'll get into more, but those guys have done some really like really cool stuff on that, really cool research on this topic. So RF percentage, ratio of force computed as the ratio of the step averaged horizontal component of the ground reaction force to the corresponding resultant force. That was a lot. So all this is saying, when you are sprinting, you have ground reaction forces in the vertical plane, You have ground reaction forces in the horizontal plane, so the Y and X axes, and you have a resultant vector. So if you guys remember back to, you know, high school physics, if we were to draw a force vector diagram for sprinting, you're going to have your vertical force, so my arrow going straight up perpendicular to my X axis. You're going to have your horizontal force, so my arrow going perpendicular to the Y axis. Okay, the summation of those two, I think that was the right term for them, summation. Basically, when you're adding those two together, those two component vectors, you get what's called a resultant vector. That's the angle, basically, like that's the direction that you're moving, right? So in sprinting, that looks kind of like 45 degrees angled to the ground, moving forward. RF percentage tells you how much force you're putting into the ground horizontally or backwards. What percent of the resultant force vector that's taking you forward is horizontal. And this is important because what you're going to find is having really high percentage oriented in the horizontal plane is really, really correlated to good acceleration. So RF percentage is basically what ratio of that total force is directed in the horizontal plane.
Makes sense.
RF max percentage would be it's just the maximal value of RF. So what is the maximal horizontal force that you could apply here? So RF percentage is how much horizontal force you're actually applying. RF max percentage is how much you theoretically could apply. And then another value that you're going to see here, and this is like, and we'll get into it, but like there's some pretty cool implications for this in the research, is D sub RF. So this is basically just the rate of decrease in RF. So think about, if I explain this just kind of layman's terms, don't worry about the physics of it. Just think about what's happening as you're running. As you're running, right? So I start from a standstill. I accelerate. As I reach top speed, my body is becoming more vertical. Right? I'm going from that 45 degree lean, and over time I'm gradually becoming more upright. What's happening is when I'm leaning, I'm really focused on that horizontal force vector, right? So I'm pushing down and back to drive me forward in my resultant force vector. As I'm speeding up, I'm becoming more vertically oriented, and that force vector, like we talked about earlier, switches from more horizontal to more vertical. So DRF is important because what you find is one of the biggest differentiating factors in speed and specifically acceleration is fast sprinters, good accelerators, and by that same token, good team sport athletes that have good first step, 10, 20 yard quickness have better DRF values. So the rate at which they decrease their RF is much slower than people that don't. So they are able to continue producing horizontal force longer, which allows them to continue accelerating longer. In people that are slower, they're gonna basically drop off. They may have high horizontal force on that first step or even that second step, but then it rapidly falls off. So they're now losing their ability to propel themselves forward. So RF percentage, how much horizontal force you're producing. RF max percentage, how much you could possibly produce. So this is basically the equivalent of SFV optimal. This is what we're going for. This is what we want to try to get to. And then DRF is how well you maintain that horizontal force production as you're accelerating.
That's all the nerdy stuff, man.
All the nerdy
stuff. That's all that nerdy stuff.
And I think like we went deep dive here, but it was really cool to see like there's a lot of good research out there to show some pretty compelling stuff regarding some of these variables and how they impact sprinting.
Oh, all this is so relevant because, you know, if you think about like a football running back, really any position, but let's think about a running back. If he's trying to escape from a defender, how quickly, if he doesn't want to get tackled from this guy, he's got to get away from him. So he's got a lower center of mass. He's got to be quick. He's got to deliver a lot of force into the ground at the right angle. So we can find out some of these numbers here to objectively help this guy get away from the defender faster, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's the name of the game. That's the takeaway. Let's take a little pause here for a word from our sponsors. All right. So kind of, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff, and I think that's part of the nature of this discussion is there are like so many factors and components to this, but just kind of rehash, I think for me, after reading like all the research on this, it it reaffirmed a lot of the stuff that I knew. Kind of horizontal force production is king in acceleration. Vertical force production is king in top speed. But there was a few other like specific takeaways that I wanted to kind of touch on. So there's a really good study out of France. JB Marin was the lead author. Pierre Samazzino, who both of them have done a ton of work on the force velocity profiling, but this paper specifically is called Mechanical Determinants of 100 Meter Sprint Running Performance. So they were basically trying to find out like what makes you fast, like how do you become a good sprinter? And they had some like the most relevant takeaway from this was that the direction of force application is more important than the magnitude. So that's why we kept harping earlier on kind of like that, those RF measures. And all that means is like, the takeaway for this is like, you really, really need to be focusing on that horizontal force production and how effectively they're able to orient that force. There's another study that showed basically that horizontal impulse was the biggest determining factor in sprint time. So with impulse, it's just impulse is equal to basically change in momentum is equal to force times change in time. And that delta P is your impulse value. So these guys were able to apply really high levels of horizontal force over that same ground contact time and maintain that same vector where they were applying it really, really horizontally, basically down and back. So yeah, just that, I think that was probably the biggest takeaway for me was like, it was pretty interesting to see that how important the direction of force application was, even in comparison to the magnitude of force. Cause that was something that was a bias that I had. And it's interesting. We'll kind of report back on this, but Liam and I have been kind of messing around with some of this in our own training and watching myself run. There's definitely some issues with my direction of force application, that I think I think a lot of athletes are like this, maybe like me, where they might do pretty good on a vertical jump and be able to display some good power. Maybe they have pretty good weight room numbers, seem to have high levels of strength, but it doesn't quite match up with sprint performance. And I think in my case, I'll have to report back, but I definitely think after watching the video and then reading all this research, I think there's a big deficit in direction. And I think that's something that you probably see with a lot of athletes. The practical application of this, like the takeaway we wanted you guys to get from all this is, even if you're not going to do any of this profiling, something like very heavy sled training, so pushing or pulling like a very heavy sled, that's going to be huge, because not only is it a specific strength exercise, right? So you're going to strengthen ankles, knees, hips in those specific joint angles they're going to use, but it also is going to allow you, it's basically going to overemphasize that orientation of the torso forward. So it's going to allow them to push down and back. So really feel what it's like to orient your force in a more horizontal plane. So, you know, if you're not going to do any of the testing, the takeaway is like, just push some heavy sleds, pull some heavy sleds, like do more of that resisted type running or sprinting or marching or whatever, so your athletes can get in that position, feel that position, build strength in that position, and ultimately like develop the skill of continuing to apply kind of more force in that horizontal vector. So that's kind of like my key summary or takeaway, especially as it pertains to acceleration from all this stuff.
Yeah, I've seen that so much with athletes where they're cutting and how they keep their, a lot of guys have a tendency to raise that center of mass just higher, obviously, and that's going to create a more vertical force, and it's not going to be as efficient. So if we can teach these, get these guys in the right positions, get them comfortable moving there, I think that's going to be huge in affecting their performance. One specific article that I think kind of sums all this stuff up, they did this force profiling. They found guys who were either force deficient, velocity deficient, they had a control group, and they attacked these specific deficits with certain protocols. And what they found was these, if you just gave these guys who were deficient in the specific things, it actually improved their jump height at a higher magnitude than these other groups who you would just find someone who did have a deficit. You gave them some random training protocol, and it provided with random results. So there is really some stuff behind this testing. There's something else I want to go with that. But yeah, my big takeaway, I totally think this is something we can do in the clinic as well as a physical therapist, obviously as a strength coach, and find just being more specific with your training. Like, yeah, these in high school, obviously these kids, a lot of them just need to get stronger. So if you improve their strength, of course it's going to improve their performance. But there comes a point where, you know, you need to focus on other things rather than just how much weight you can lift. And doing certain tests like this can help direct the plan of care, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's like, the way I view it is a lot of those like traditional squat, deadlift, things like that they're valuable to do, definitely. And they're going to help athletes with just their ability to develop maximal force. And then maybe something like pushing a heavy sled or doing some resisted sprinting, that's like your transfer drill, right? So keep squatting, keep deadlifting, keep having those athletes build levels of force, but maybe look to incorporate some of that resisted running into your training as a better means of getting your weight room gains to transfer over onto the field of play. And then definitely, like, if they need to run in their sport, I think this is like clear evidence that like you need to spend some time running with them as well to actually develop that skill aspect of it.
And you can totally see this. I've seen this so many times, looking at footage of just these one-on-one wide receiver versus cornerback drills. The guys that get away and create that separation, they do these things we're finding in this research. So there's something to it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed this podcast. Hopefully we gave you guys some relevant information and some stuff that you guys can take away from.